The Book Rescuer: How a Mensch from Massachusetts Saved Yiddish Literature for Generations to Come. A True Story, written by Sue Macy, illustrated by Stacy Ernest. This is a Sidney Taylor 2020 Book Award winner. It was published in 2019. In memory of Jackie Glatzel, who rescued many a book from a scrap heap or giveaway pile, and Adel Nitrotsky, my Yiddish grandmother, dedicated with love to the congregation of the Tree of Life Synagogue in the Squirrel Hill neighborhood of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Kuma here. Sit down. I want to tell you a story. It starts a long time ago when Aaron Lansky's 16-year-old grandma left Eastern Europe for the United States. She didn't bring much with her, just a cardboard suitcase with some precious items from her old life, a goose down pillow, a pair of candlesticks, a photograph of her mama and papa who stayed in Europe, and a few books in Yiddish, the everyday language of Eastern European Jews. After a long ocean voyage, Aaron's grandma reached New York City, where her older brother was waiting. He greeted her, took the suitcase, and tossed it into the Hudson River. "Oy, Gewalt," he said. It was time to break with the past and think about the future. Aaron never forgot that story. Who could? It made him curious about the life his grandma had left behind. Make no mistake, Aaron was an all-American boy. He grew up in New Bedford, Massachusetts, horsing around with his two brothers. He joined the Boy Scouts. He watched Star Trek. He also loved books. Aaron received his first library card at the age of 4, and from that time forward, he read everything he could get his hands on. Is it a surprise, then, that books would end up playing a big part in Aaron's life? Of course not. In college, he decided to study Jewish history by reading novels written by Jews of the past. He felt they were the perfect way to understand how Jewish people lived. But many of the books Aaron wanted to read were written in Yiddish. So, no, first he had to learn the language. During the early decades of the 20th century, as many as 13 million people around the world spoke Yiddish. By the time Aaron was growing up in the 1960s, though, Yiddish was aftoris, in trouble. Nazi Germany and its allies killed millions of Yiddish-speaking Jews in World War II from 1939 to 1945. Other Yiddish speakers fled Eastern Europe and raised their children in countries where they learned the local languages instead of Yiddish. Although Aaron was the grandson of Eastern Europe immigrants, he knew only those Yiddish words that had entered the English language. Words like bagel and klutz and nosh and glitch. No one ever spoke Yiddish to me, to my brothers, or to anyone else our age, he said. Like many other first-generation Jews, Aaron's parents wanted their kinder to fit in by speaking and reading English. As Yiddish speakers disappeared, so did books written in Yiddish. Students like Aaron had a hard time finding Yiddish books for school. That's why he was stunned when he visited his hometown rabbi and spotted a basket filled with Yiddish books on the floor of his office. What were they doing there? The rabbi said he intended to bury them. Aaron could have plotzed. Destroying Yiddish books was like erasing Jewish history. But these books were no longer useful, the rabbi explained, and burying them was a sign of respect. Aaron was not having it. With the rabbi's blessing, he took everything in the basket. And I'm having a little bit technical difficulty. My Wi-Fi has been tricky, so hang in there before I get to the next page. And I want to make sure I didn't skip a page, so I'm going to go back and back. And here I am. Perfect. All right. Here we go. Aaron said Yiddish books were the, quote, portable homeland, unquote, of the Jewish people. What did he mean by that? Before the founding of Israel in 1948, Jews didn't have their own homeland. Instead, they lived in countries all over the world. It was through books that Jews recorded and shared their experiences and beliefs. Books are big enough and powerful enough to define and contain identity, said Aaron. So ponder that last quote. Read it over, please, as I try to turn the page, because it's a pretty, pretty powerful message here. Okay, I think I skipped a page. All right. Aaron's search for Yiddish books continued in Montreal, Canada, where he had started graduate school. Soon, he was flooded with donations. He collected so many books that he could hardly find room to sleep in his apartment. Veizmir, at the same time, his parents said their house was getting crowded with baskets of books from Aaron's rabbi. They were starting to worry that the second story would collapse from the added weight. As the books piled up, Aaron realized he was no longer interested in simply gathering enough for his own use. Now, he wanted to save as many Yiddish books as possible. So, what did he do? I'll tell you. He took time off from graduate school and hauled his entire library back to Massachusetts. Then he went to see the leaders of the biggest Jewish organizations in the country. If we don't save these books now, they'll be lost forever, Aaron told them. But the leaders shook their heads. They said Yiddish was a language whose time had passed. Fortunately, Aaron wouldn't take no for an answer. He rented space in an old factory building and founded the Yiddish Book Center, dedicated to collecting unwanted Yiddish books. After a reporter from the Boston Globe wrote an article about the center, boxes of books started to arrive. So did frantic phone calls. One particular call came at midnight from a friend of Aaron's in New York City. She had found a dumpster full of Yiddish books, she said, and it was scheduled to be hauled off to the trash heap the next day. What's more, the weather forecasters were predicting rain. It was snowing in Massachusetts that night, and the roads were icy, but Aaron rushed to the railroad station to catch the 2 a.m. train to New York. As the sun rose and the rain fell, Aaron and a group of friends rummaged through the giant garbage container. It was filled with thousands of books, emptied out of a nearby building that had once housed a Yiddish organization. Aaron and his buddies managed to get close to 5,000 of them into a rented truck, where he drove them all the way home. Aaron also set out on a less hazardous trip to collect books offered up by older Jews. He drove to houses and apartments in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and beyond. The people he visited called him Younger Man or Young Man, and plied him with food as they shared their stories. Over tea and cake and lox and kugel, they told Aaron about their jobs, their families, their communities. Most of all, they told them about their books. These men and women handed Aaron one book at a time, their eyes filling with tears as they recounted when they bought it and what it meant to them. We didn't eat much, one woman told Aaron, but we always bought a book. It was a necessity of life. Aaron felt their sadness at having no family members who could read their prized possessions, and he saw the relief once they realized they could trust him to keep their books safe. When Aaron founded the Yiddish Book Center in 1980, experts believed there might be only 70,000 Yiddish books left in the world. He collected that many in 6 months and kept going. And wouldn't you know it, people started paying attention. In 1989, Aaron won an award known as the MacArthur Genius Grant, given to people who make a difference in the world. The MacArthur Foundation praised Aaron for giving Yiddish culture new life and introducing it to new generations. Okay, again, I'm having a tricky time turning the page. And as I'm doing that, I'd like you to think about this transference of books from hand to hand, from generation to generation, and how precious these stories are. Aaron's accomplishments certainly would have made his grandma Kivil, although the suitcase she brought to New York is long gone, Erin has kept her story alive by saving 1.5 million Yiddish books. But the books don't just sit around collecting dust. Erin shares them with schools and libraries and uses them in programs about Yiddish literature. Quote, "Between their covers," he said, "the voices of my grandmother's world can still be heard." Beautiful painting here. Reminds me of Marc Chagall, the great artist. And then the afterword here is showing the original Erin Lansky and how he embarked on this endeavor in 1982 as a younger man, and then later on in 2011. And he says, "I'll admit it, racing around a rattletrap truck in search of a dusty book was a lot of fun. But what we're doing now, opening up those books, excavating the lost civilization they contain, and sharing its treasures with the world, that's even better. After all these years, I can't wait to see what happens next." I hope you enjoyed that story as much as I do.